decisions need to be examined in as thoughtful and rigorous an interview as possible. Now, journalists don't do this work to score political points. We do it in the service of asking tough questions on your behalf so you and the world can hear the answers, or lack thereof. That is both a privilege and a responsibility. When you donate to this NPR station, you support journalism that does not back down. Here is how to give and how to help public radio hold powerful people to account.
Donate now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. Liver than live as live can be, to bring you the latest local news and information. And on a Thursday evening, that means checking in with Philip Pantuso of the Times Union, Times Union Hudson Valley. And we're going to start with an update on a story that we've been following for a while here. First, let me bring Philip on. Philip's joining us live right now. Welcome back to the local edition.
Good to be with you and live.
And live. So, we've been talking about the Hudson Valley doctor who allegedly prescribed abortion pills to a woman in Texas, I think also in Louisiana. So basically running afoul of the AGs in both of those states and those states' abortion laws. And essentially setting up a conflict between the Ulster County clerk, you know, here in upstate New York, and one of the most powerful attorneys general in the nation.
Yeah, that's right. That would be Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas. And Paxton and the Ulster County clerk, who is technically the acting clerk, Taylor Brooke, they had their first standoff in March when the Texas Attorney General's office tried to enforce a judgment on that doctor who had mailed the abortion pills, allegedly. They tried to enforce that judgment that was issued in Texas in the state of New York. And what happened there is that the Ulster County Clerk refused to file it.
Okay, so what does that mean? What are the consequences?
Well, at the time, I reported what everyone from Acting Clerk Brooke all the way up to Governor Hochul and others in New York State government believed would happen, which was that they thought that this was essentially a prelude to a lawsuit that would find or that would attempt to bring down a law in New York that shields doctors who mail abortion medication across state lines. Those laws are called telehealth shield laws, and eight states have them, including New York. And basically what those laws stipulate is that officials and agencies in those states will not cooperate with prosecutions or lawsuits against doctors or other medical facilitators in their states for prescribing abortion medication to patients in other states, including where that care is restricted. New York's law has been in place since June of 2023, which is a year after the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade. And earlier this year, Governor Kathy Hochul actually signed another law that allows New York doctors to prescribe abortion medication out of state anonymously in an attempt to, try to protect doctors from facing the kind of legal and other blowback that Dr. Carpenter here in New Paltz has faced for the medication that she mailed out. But ultimately, in March, let me back up a little bit. What happened was that in Texas, they discovered that this doctor had mailed abortion medication to a patient in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they filed a civil lawsuit against her in the state of Texas. Dr. Carpenter never showed up to court, didn't respond to a court summons, just really didn't participate in the proceeding at all. And so a judge down there issued a summary ruling, I think in late February, and slapped a $100,000 penalty on her. Now, that's completely unenforceable in the state of Texas. And so what the state of Texas was trying to do when they sent that decision to New York back in March was get the clerk to file it in a New York court, then it would be enforceable. The county clerk refused to do so, citing the telehealth shield law. And again, like I said, everybody kind of expected that that would presage a lawsuit. That never happened. And so the news here is that essentially they made another attempt last week. Texas Attorney General's office sent the same documents with a cover letter that said that the acting county clerk had a, quote, statutory duty to make the filing under New York civil practice law. And they set an arbitrary deadline of, I believe, July 16th. But on Monday, the clerk again rejected it. And so now we expect that probably means the lawsuit probably will be coming in short order.
Is there any risk for the Ulster County clerk? Because, again, you know, we're talking about two different major states, two of the biggest states in the union, having different laws on the same issue. The acting Ulster County clerk is acting in accordance with the state law here in New York. Is there any risk to him, either personally or his office?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that he could be named in the suit. So, you know, he could be a party in this litigation. And, you know, quite clearly, I think if such a lawsuit were to come, it would be filed in federal court. And the aim would be to try to get it before the Supreme Court, saying that, you know, this law under which the clerk is refusing to file the judgment is improper, and if it gets struck down, they could also maybe make the argument that he was, breaking a law. So, you know, I'm not going to speculate too much on what their legal argument will be with regards to him specifically, but I know from having interviewed him back in March and again this week that he is certainly cognizant of the possibility that he could be named in a lawsuit by Ken Paxton.
He's aware of it. Is he telling you how he's feeling about that?
I think he's pretty stressed about it. Although, you know, when this first happened in March, his wife was 8 months pregnant and he was only like a couple of months into the job. He had formerly been the deputy clerk. He became the acting county clerk when the former Ulster County clerk passed away. You know, fast forward a couple of months, the baby's here. I'm sure he's not getting a ton of sleep. But I think he's at least had a few months to sort of mentally prepare for it now. And, you know, everything he has said to me when I've interviewed him for these two stories I've written was that he feels that, you know, the law here in New York is clear. And he also, I think, has a kind of ethical resistance, I guess, to the idea that Texas would try to use him as an instrument to enforce its laws in another state. And he, you know, is not having any of that.
Right. Right. And just the last thing is time frame. So it's very interesting that I was having a little difficulty in seeing the news just because, again, this sounded like a familiar story. As you're saying, it is a familiar story because it's essentially the same, a very similar set of events as happened back in March. And it took this many months to get to this point again. So what's the time frame moving forward? Is it still going to be months before we see the next development, possibly?
I wish I could tell you.
You're watching it too.
Yeah. The Texas Attorney General's office did not respond to requests for comment on this story. I am signed up for all of their filings and all of their press releases. I'm getting a lot of stuff about immigration and transgender rights, but nothing yet about a lawsuit against the Ulster County clerk. But really, it could happen. It could happen while we're talking. It could happen in a month. It could happen in 3 months. Maybe it'll never happen, and they're just trying to scare him into submission. But I wish I could tell you.
Okay, and I know we have an archaeological update to get to, but I want to kind of stick with some more criminal proceedings stories and stay in Ulster County now. And talk about what's happening in Saugerties, and a grand jury's indicted a Saugerties police officer. But I know there's been other issues with Saugerties police as well.
Yeah. So the top line news here is that a grand jury last week indicted a Saugerties police officer for felony sex crimes that include sexual abuse and criminal contact with a minor. And allegedly, he committed these actions while he was employed at the Saugerties Police Department in 2022. But this is just the latest in what's becoming a troubling string of allegations of sexual misconduct among officers in Saugerties. This same guy, his name is Sidney Mills. He's 53 now. He was previously named in a federal lawsuit back in 2007 that accused him of assisting yet another Saugerties police officer in basically like some sexual criminal activity. The officer he was accused of assisting was tried and acquitted of rape and sex crimes. But this guy was named in the lawsuit, and there was which was a civil proceeding. He allegedly ordered a girl into the back of a patrol car where this other officer sexually abused her. It's not clear what was the result of that lawsuit. Again, no criminal charges were brought against this guy. And the law office that represented the accuser, said they no longer had legal records from the case. But certainly this was something that would have been known about him when he was hired and moved through the ranks in Saugerties. The longtime police chief there was also the police chief when another Saugerties police officer was accused of 11 charges ranging from burglary to sexual abuse and workplace harassment. That man, Dion Johnson, formerly was an Albany officer. He had moved to Saugerties back in 2020 after facing some allegations in Albany, and due to the way that the sort of internal reference system works among police, not all details of those allegations allegedly or apparently made their way down to Saugerties. That officer earlier this year agreed to a plea deal with the Attorney General's office, and that case ended up bringing down the Saugerties police chief, Joe Sinagra, who had been in charge there for a long time, over allegations that he had mishandled this case. So a lot of kind of gross activity happening in the Saugerties police department.
Wow. Are there any, in Saugerties or, you know, in the county, any observers, watchdogs, any reaction from the public?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've had a lot of Saugerties readers reach out to us to say that it's long past time for this police department to kind of clean up its act. As I mentioned, the police chief who was in charge during all of the allegations that I've mentioned is no longer in charge. He took basically an early retirement while he was on leave last year. There's a new police chief in there now. They're promising more transparency in how they handle these kinds of allegations. But there are a lot of questions that people have about who knew what, when, particularly with regards to this most recent case. You know, like I said, this guy was indicted just last week for activity that occurred in 2022. Why was he allowed to continue to work all that time? And he was also named in a really sort of, you know, alarming and tawdry case as far back as 2007. We don't yet know exactly what happened with that case, as I said, but I'm sure this is what readers are telling us anyway. It seems like the kind of thing that should have been on the radar of the police department. And because he was employed as a police officer then as well. And did they take proper disciplinary action? Did they make any changes as a result of the allegations in that case? Those are the kinds of questions that people are asking. And we're working on some sort of follow-up reporting to try to answer some of those questions.
Right. And well, when it comes to those questions, I mean, of course, you know, the upfront news here, you know, Sidney Mills, you know, was indicted by a grand jury. But when it comes to these bigger issues that members of the public are raising with this police department, you're looking into it. Are there any other like state agencies or anybody else that's like looking into this?
Well, the district attorney's office was looking into how the department handled the previous case, the officer Dion Johnson, who earlier this year agreed to a plea deal. They, as a result of that investigation, released a report which had several recommendations for the Saugerties Police Department. And it had concluded that their disciplinary actions against that previous officer were insufficient, and they said that they have to update and improve their policies and practices regarding reporting of any alleged misconduct in the handling of internal investigations. That report was from the AG's office. They have a division called the Law Enforcement Misconduct Investigative Office. And, they're allowed to investigate what happened in local police departments and issue recommendations, but they can't actually enforce that. There has to be a sort of discrete case that then would work its way through the courts. So, you know, one of the things we're interested in pursuing as follow-up reporting is, okay, how well has the police department implemented some of the recommendations from that report? Because I think earlier I said it was last year. I misspoke. It was actually 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That should be enough time to at least start to take a measurement there.
All right. Well, thank you for that reporting. Philip, you don't mind, I want to just take a quick break and maybe give folks an update on the fund drive, but I know we've got more stories coming up, including an update on the mastodon fossils that were found in Wallkill last year. Are you good to stay with us for a bit?
You got it.
All right.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local. Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, with campuses in Harris and Calicoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Support also comes from listeners like you. That's why we're looking for your support right now, listener. In the final day of our fun drive, we're ending this tomorrow night, so we've got just a little more than 24 hours left to finish raising $55,000. How much of that can you do? Please let us know. We have volunteers ready to take your call at 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141. You can make your donation online at WJFFradio.org. That's WJFFradio.org. WJFFradio.org. You can donate there just like listener Hratch did. And they're saying WJFF provides a priceless, necessary, and patriotic service. It's a community treasure. Thank you so much, Ratch. Thank you so much for that donation and that beautiful comment. Very generous donation. please, everybody has to do what they can here. If you don't have something to do now, if you don't have the funds to make a donation, we understand. But if you do have the ability to give, if you can spare an amount that's good for you to help us out, we do need you now more than ever. As you may have heard, the Senate agreed to basically take back the funding that we already figured was coming to us. And the corrections to that bill, the amendments to that bill are being examined by the House now. We expect the House to vote soon, and then you'll have both chambers of commerce agreeing that we won't be getting any more money from the federal government. That leaves a 25% hole in our annual budget, a quarter of the budget that we are planning on. And this is just months away that this would affect us. A quarter of our budget will be missing. We will need to make that up. That means we all kind of have to do 25% more to make up for this. So if you've thought about giving in the past and you haven't before, if you're just thinking about it now for the first time, please consider it seriously and then let us know what you can give. Go to WJFFradio.org or call us here 845-482-4141.
Could not be higher. You could easily see a situation where we have higher inflation, a worse economic backdrop, and a person in the role who is not kind of willing to make the tough choices that would potentially go against the president.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Coming up in just a matter of minutes here on Radio Catskill, but right now this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'm talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union in Hudson Valley. And Philip, you've got an update on a story on those mastodon remains, fossils that were found not far away in Wallkill, New York last year.
Yes, this was a really cool story. A few months after that discovery, which researchers termed a once-in-a-lifetime discovery, they found basically more fossils in the same backyard. So these were students at SUNY Orange under the guidance of an anthropologist who chairs the behavioral sciences department, as well as some scientists from the State Museum, New York State Museum. That's right. As people might recall, last year, it was a couple of homeowners who found a few bones last year, which they sent to SUNY Orange. The anthropologist there identified it as likely mastodon bones, and so they sent out students and researchers to dig, and they found, this is sort of astonishing discovery: teeth, bone fragments, and a complete adult jaw, which apparently is quite rare to find. And the photos we have of that are really amazing if people want to look at them. And so, prompted by that discovery, they went back out earlier this summer, for a sort of 6-week summer field course, digging back there, and they uncovered a lot more remains. These include more jaw fragments, ribs, and multiple vertebrae, including the vertebrae that is the base of the skull. And scientists believe that some of those bones, at least, are from the same specimen that was uncovered back in the fall. And of course, some of the other ones are probably from other mastodons that were part of a herd or traveling through at a later time. Apparently this area, Orange County, is like mastodon HQ. Prompted by the discovery last fall, I had our history writer do a kind of deep dive into the history of mastodon fossils that have been found in Orange County. Something like a third of the discoveries of mastodon fossils in New York are from Orange County specifically. The director of research at the New York State Museum told us that Orange County has the highest density of mastodon finds of anywhere in the country.
Oh, wow.
They'd love to hang out in Pleistocene-era Orange County.
Orange County, New York's a mastodon hotspot. How did I not know this? Like I'm 10,000 years late to the party.
Yeah, literally.
This is what I'm looking at your article on Times Union. I just got to explain this to a listener that like some of these fossils that you're looking at, these are you know, definitely rocks that look like bones. But some of these fossils, these small fragments, they just look like stones. Like I wouldn't have thought anything if I'd seen that on the ground.
Well, that's why we're in journalism and not in anthropology, I guess.
Why you get that trowel away from that journalist? They don't know what they're doing. Oh, my goodness. Well, Philip, we've only got a couple more minutes here, but I think that's enough time to talk about the basically an audit of an auditor. What's the state comptroller's office saying? What's the story about?
Yeah, speaking of digging in Orange County, this is a follow-up on, I believe I discussed this story last week. The state comptroller's office announced that one of its auditors allegedly had been stealing money from the town of Walk Hill in Orange County while conducting an audit of that town's finances. They charged him with grand larceny. This guy, his name is Tobias Otieno. He has worked as an auditor for the state controller's office since 2018 and has audited mostly school districts, it looks like, a bunch of school districts in the lower Hudson Valley and mid-Hudson Valley. He's also done some town audits in Ingram, Patterson, and Walk Hill, of course. And so what the controller's office is doing is essentially auditing his audits to make sure that there is no other sort of theft or impropriety that occurred while he was doing those. And so far, they have not found anything.
Okay. Well, that's good. Are they still looking? They're still digging?
They are still looking, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they are still looking.
Well, that's great. And, well, I want to let everybody know that these stories that we talked about today, they are all up now at timesunion.com. We've been talking to Philip Pantuso of the Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau, who comes to us every week at this time. And, Philip, I hope you have a great week until we talk again next week. And good luck digging up the news.
Always good to be with you.
Well, and I guess that's it for the local edition tonight. So I'll play my outro music now. Just like that. I'm Jason Dole. This has been the Local Edition, and we come to you every evening at this time, and now the show is done. So thank you so much for being here with us, and thank you for listening. Just a reminder that local news returns tomorrow morning at 10. 5 days a week, we have local news and conversations with Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno. 5 days a week, we have a Local Edition with myself and Patricio Robayo. In the evenings, that's daily news twice a day, 5 days a week here. But then we also have local news on the weekends. We run local headlines every weekend, so you get those news updates even on the weekend as well. Local news, information, culture. Then we also bring you all the great reporting at the national and international level that we get from NPR and other outlets that we wouldn't be able to get if we didn't have NPR and those other outlets. And we wouldn't be able to do any of this without the support of listeners like you. And now that we seem poised to lose our federal funding, now that Congress seems poised to take that funding away, we're going to need your support now more than ever. So when you get a moment, please go to WJFFradio.org. That's WJFFradio.org to support us here during our summer fun drive. Make a donation in honor of the Local Edition, Radio Chatskill, all of the great local news that we have here, our ever-growing news team. Go to WJFFradio.org. It's WJFFradio.org to make your donation. And I want to say thank you to listener Gabriel making a donation, checking in online. Thank you so much to listener Gabriel. It's good to see that support. Something else, listener, I'm going to be asking you to do more and more in the coming days and months, especially, again, if we do lose this federal funding, is I'm going to be asking you to do what you can to spread the word about the work that we're doing here to others. We've seen an amazing growth in our listenership. We've seen many first-time donors during this fund drive, and that's a great thing to see. We're available in so many places in so many ways, and so many of them are eminently shareable with others. and just letting people know that we're here. There's still plenty of people in the communities in our listening area that don't know about the work that we do. The more people that know, the more people who can stand with us and help us weather the storms to come, help us keep providing you this great local information. So please check out WJFFradio.org, all of the great podcasts and show archives that we have there. Share that with friends. Check us out. Subscribe. We are at YouTube. Look for Radio Catskill on YouTube. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Find us there. Follow us. Share our posts and let folks know we're all in this together. This is Radio Catskill. It's time for The Daily. We'll be back.